think a lot of people hate on last click, because what people will do is they're like, oh, I'm losing money on Facebook. My ROAS is a 1 on Facebook, but it's a 7 on Google. And then the board member or the CEO or somebody who doesn't understand this stuff will be like, we got to stop spending money on Facebook. We got to put our money into Google. It's like, how the fuck do you think they got to Google? They had to find out about you somewhere.
Episode 9. The last couple of weeks, Cody wasn't here with us. Yeah, he was traveling, doing, well, I was telling people you were doing CMO stuff.
I was. So first week I was in Colorado and I literally didn't go, there wasn't good snow, but I didn't go to the mountain. But it was like pretty much like the last week before like holidays. So last full week. So I was literally in like an office, like turned like a spare bedroom into an office, like just doing like end of year reviews and budget planning and stuff. It was good times, fun stuff.
Yeah, fun stuff. So we had Ridge Wallet Man.
That was good. I love that one.
They're both a blast.
My favorite part, can I tell you what my favorite part was? I think I told you, but just so everyone hears. When you're asking him what he would do, I just think Sean is so funny. When you're asking what he would do, and he was just like, you know, I would just DM people and I would just say, yo. And then he's like, no, you know what I would do? I would sell UGC. No one's ever thought of that.
It's genius.
I thought it was so funny. So I think I'm funny. He probably didn't think it's funny at all. He probably didn't even get the reference. But I just DM'd him after that. And I was just like, yo, do you need UGC? Like, I thought it was funny. He probably didn't. But that was good. He's super smart as well.
Yeah, that was a blast. So if you haven't checked out the last two, definitely check it out. That was episode 7 and 8. We're at episode 9. The thing that we were talking about a couple of times over the last 7 or 8 episodes was we had this little contest. You know, if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts and you drop us an email, we're going to choose one person and do an hour like mentor pass call together. And we chose a random winner who is Libby from Fulton, the insert.
Oh man, I was going to do like a drum roll. You just came out right out with it.
I just went straight for it. There's that. So that's exciting. Yeah, that's exciting. We'll talk all landing pages, growth, retention, all that fun stuff. And I guess let's get into it. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, so Libby, if you're listening, get in touch. Shoot us an email. I think you got Eli's email. Shoot us an email. But thank you for everybody who left a review. Thank you for everybody who's been listening. You know, took a little break just because of holidays, but we are, I think this is episode 9, right?
Yeah.
So episode 9 of season 2. So it's been super fun. Thanks for all the feedback. I think our audio is getting better, but let us know. I can't get my camera working today, but audio is more important. So hopefully that's crispy enough.
Down to Chat is brought to you by Peel. I know Black Friday this year has been nuts, and I wanted to take 2 minutes to walk you through some of the things that we look at in Peel to understand how we did retention-wise, as well as obviously acquisition-wise. This is being shared on video if you're on Spotify or YouTube. If not, you can take a look there, but I'll also try to make it as audio-friendly as I can. So first things first, we are always looking at distribution by order number to understand like what percentage of these customers that came in over Black Friday are first time versus second time versus third time or fourth, et cetera. So in our case, you can see 55% of the customers were new customers, which is obviously amazing, but also it's interesting to see that there are folks that have ordered 6, 7, 8, 9 times that are still coming back. That are still coming back on Black Friday. The next thing we look at is returning customers by cohort to get a better understanding of, are there spikes that we're looking at in terms of, you know, the second month, third month, fourth month. What you can see here is January, February, March customers had a spike in April, May, which is when we launched our foundation, but also again around Black Friday, which is obviously amazing to see that we're kind of re-engaging these folks. Another fun dashboard we look at is year over year. So having a better understanding, not just on the gross sales and orders, but also on AOV, products sold, et cetera, and you know, discounting if applicable. The last interesting thing I love, we've spoken about audiences in the past, but this is especially interesting because we can see first-time customers that came in Black Friday to get a better understanding of obviously their AOV, their LTV and all that fun stuff. But we can also export this audience into Klaviyo to send them unique messaging or Attentive to send them a text or hell, even turn them into a direct mailer audience of customers, which is great. The last thing, which I don't have on this loom, is looking at gifting. So we can kind of take a group of customers and segment the folks that have different shipping and billing, and then assume that they are sending gifts and maybe message them differently, which is fun, and a different way to slice and dice, which is the name of the game. One last thing for listeners of Down to Chat, if you want to give Peel a shot, you can go to peelinsights.com/more/down to chat for 20% off the first 3 months. So again, 20% off for the first 3 months. Go to peelinsights.com/more/down-to-chat.
I'd love to talk about Facebook ads, just kind of what's working now. I had my first tweet when I was kind of over the break with 1,000 likes. So I think people kind of resonated with that. So I can kind of just go into some of that, you know, what I'm seeing right now, what I'm working on. I'm starting to, you know, in addition to doing the Jones Road stuff, whether that be Mentor Pass or whether that be some kind of audits I started doing, just working with a lot of different brands on their ad strategies and whatnot. So it's really helpful to me just as a marketer to be able to see what other people are doing, see where people are, you know, making mistakes, messing up, because it's, you know, I love being just completely dedicated, focused on one brand, but it's also really helpful just to have that extra context of what other people are doing and what's seeing, because it's great if you see something working in one account. Once you start seeing it working in other accounts and whatnot, it just makes it really fun. So yeah, we can definitely chat about that and talk about it. And then I think you also wanted to talk about answering the question that somebody asked you, can you over-optimize your site? Or really just in general, can you over-optimize in general?
All the CRO folks, they're trembling.
Yeah. So let's do it. Which one should we talk about first? I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, we can kick off the what you're seeing on Facebook. I think that we are obviously big spenders on Facebook, but I think you've, like you said, seen a bunch of accounts over the last couple of weeks, and I think it's exciting to see. The only thing, I love knowing just a tiny bit of everything just so I can throw little words to make believe I know what I'm talking about. So I've been hearing a lot about PMax.
That's a Google thing, but yeah, Performance Max, Google thing.
Yeah. I'm a growth guy. Just got,
you know, you and I probably know the same amount about Google advertising, though. You might know more than me about Google. I know nothing about Google. All right, so here's what we're saying. Yeah, let's start Facebook, Meta. So yeah, I mean, overall, things look really, really good. Again, this is not just for us. This is kind of across the board. I think that something has happened. There's been some type of light bulb, you know, that's just been switched and gone on, and performance has looked really good. And, you know, I think a lot of times when things look good, when things look good or bad, you know, there's a lot more complaining when things look bad than there is praising when things look good. But I try to be that guy, always, you know, giving Facebook credit, because it's really, you know, pretty remarkable, I think, what they've done and how they've been able to, you know, counteract a lot of the changes and stabilize things. So I don't think they're getting enough credit. I don't think they're getting enough credit out of the public market, but I think hopefully soon we're going to see this could be a big, big year for efficiency. And then hopefully that means a good year in terms of, you know, their stock price. But overall, yeah, it's been pretty good. It seems like, you know, the conversions are less delayed. There was a huge delay kind of post iOS. A lot of them were missing. There are periods where it's completely underreported, completely overreported. It's still modeled, right? So don't take that, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Don't go completely off of that. I do think I've gotten a lot of requests to talk about kind of attribution on here. So we might do that in one, but I do think it's gotten a lot better, and it's just, I'm feeling really good about kind of the data that you know, people are getting back. And so the biggest change that I've seen recently is with Advantage Plus. So if you just track what the platform has been doing throughout the years, right? Like the media buying side was way more important, the targeting, the bidding and stuff like that. You know, brands weren't investing nearly as much time and effort into creative strategy. No one was talking landing pages, you know. Yes, there were some offers, but like funnels were not really kind of things that people were talking about. And it was really just like, how do we hack this targeting? How do we scale? And, oh, we found a good interest that works. Let's scale that up. And, you know, looking back on it now, a lot of that stuff probably wasn't best practices then. You had to do a lot more manual, but there have been so many advancements with, you know, the machine learning models where you're really able to just let the algorithm and let Meta do a lot of the work. So again, I'm not saying media buying is dead. It's just different now than it used to be. What I mean by that is I think to do well before, you had to do media buying. I think now media buying is much simpler. However, I still see a ton of brands hurting themselves, shooting themselves in the foot by not understanding like the best practices, how these platforms really work, how they're working today, 2023, how they work in 2022, kind of post iOS. And so I think a lot of people are, it's like swinging a weighted bat or like running, you know, running with like a weight vest on. That's kind of what people are doing. They're just like handcuffing themselves to make it really hard to win with the way they're setting some of that stuff up. So if we look at the way that things have gone, right, it was very, you know, very manual. You had to pick your budget on different ad sets. You had to turn off ads because, you know, you would spend your full budget, whether something was working or not. And it has gotten so good where you really don't have to do much manual optimization at all, because there's a very high likelihood that if you're spending on something, it means that you're getting the best efficiency, the most efficient, you know, purchases and conversions are possible. And you don't have to worry about a bad ad taking up too much spend for the majority of the time. Again, everyone always, when I say stuff like this, like, oh, well, this happened once or twice. Facebook gets it wrong. Everybody gets it wrong. I just think Facebook gets it right a million times more than a person does. And I think people get it wrong and hurt themselves more than Facebook does. But Facebook has so many data points that we're never going to see. So really the most important thing, the biggest mistake I see people making and the biggest correlates to success is how you're letting the machine work and just letting it do not all of the work, but a lot of it. And, you know, I think this is just my complete guess take on this is that Facebook has just gotten really fed up with people. And they're like, you know what? We're giving you our recommendations. We're saying, here's our best practices. Here's our Power Five. Here's Performance Five, whatever. People are still trying to do lookalikes and interests and scaling and surfing and all this stuff. It's like, we're not even going to give you the opportunity to do that. And that's kind of what PMax is, what Performance Max is on the Google side. Again, there's pros and cons of it. The same thing has kind of happened with Advantage Plus. So what Advantage Plus is their Yoni on Twitter, who works at Meta, kind of put it really well. It's forced best practices. They're kind of, if you're using this campaign type, you don't have to use Advantage Plus right now. You can still run a manual campaign. But if you are using Advantage Plus, they're kind of forcing best practices on people, meaning it's lowest cost, so you're not able to do any cost caps. It's broad targeting, so you're not able to pick different interests or lookalikes. And so really, what do you do at the end of that? You can pick your optimization window. You can go 1 day click, 7 day click, 7 day click and 1 day view, some combinations of those. And you can pick your creative. You can pick your budget. You can pick your, you know, your offer. You can pick your landing pages. So I love it for a few reasons as a marketer. Number one, I don't think we need we prefer in-house. We don't need as big of a team because it's not a full-time job sitting there managing media. I do it myself a few hours a week. You know what I mean? Because again, the system's doing a lot more of it. So you don't have to touch nearly as much. But also, even if we might find, you know, lookalikes perform 10% better, let's say 5% better. All right, fine. If I'm taking the time and I'm sitting on the computer testing lookalike versus an interest and different interests, I might find a small, you know, incremental impact in efficiency and volume. But I think that time could be much better spent as the new role of a media buyer. Media buying is not dead, but the new role is more of a media buyer / creative strategist who's looking at data, reviewing it, coming up with the best hooks, testing the best hooks, testing the best offers, testing the best pages. Like, those are the most important things. So the reason I love these forced best practices, whether you do it in an Advantage Plus campaign or whether you're using a standard manual campaign, but you're going broad and you know most of your time is going to be spent best testing, you know, these bigger outside of the ad account variables, it's like a handcuff. You just don't have the option. It's like a constraint, and constraints force creativity. So if you have the constraint of you're doing broad, when my performance goes to shit, I'm not messing around with, oh, should I test a lookalike? Maybe what's everyone, and I'll go to Twitter. What's everyone I'm seeing on Twitter? Oh, everyone's saying lookalikes are doing well. Let me test that this week and let me test that. And all of that time and wasted headspace when you could be putting into something that's so much more important, you know? So that's how I look at it. So I would embrace it. I've heard and seen a lot of people having a lot of really good performance, some of their best performance with Advantage Plus. So I would totally lean in. It seems like grouping things with separate campaigns by different products, different offers, things like that, kind of grouping them tightly makes the most sense. But continuing to, it's not taking full budget. So for us, we're testing it, we're running it. All of our other stuff is probably performing better, but we're trying our best to embrace a lot of these best practices of the Performance Five that Meta recommends. Consolidated, lowest cost, broad, vertical short form video, stuff like that. But yeah, it's you know, let me know what questions you have as a non-ads guy, but I'm super bullish and that's a lot of what I'm seeing.
Yeah, a few questions. First of all, it sounds like we're running a bunch of Advantage Plus. Is that, do you see us shifting entirely to those campaigns?
We're actually right now it's paused for us. It's different than what I've seen other people say. We found probably slightly worse performance than our other stuff. The only other thing I'll add is the other benefit to using Advantage Plus, even if you're using like broad and these best practices with a normal campaign, there is a different machine learning model. So you're able to take advantage of a new machine learning model. I don't know about the future. I'm sure I'll continue testing it and playing around with it. But for us, we're finding better performance with other ones. But other accounts that I've been in and looked at, I'm seeing it perform better. Anywhere from like 20% of the overall budget to like 80% is what I've seen. So time will tell, but I would imagine things will go more in that direction.
So why do you think that in our case, your clicking of the keyboard is doing better than Facebook's best practices?
I mean, there's not a huge difference, but like, I'm really not clicking the keyboard. That's the thing. Like, we're on lowest cost. We're, you know, we're keeping the same optimization window. We are, so we're not doing, you know, cost caps or bid caps. And we're also not doing any lookalikes or interest targeting. It's all broad. So it's really similar. The setup is very similar. We're testing the same ads in each other. So I don't really know. Every account kind of ad account performs differently. So I'll continue to test them. But I think for a lot of brands, I've seen their best performance coming from those.
Two questions. What is Q5? Second question, when does that end? And is this like, I guess third question, is this every year? Like, is this something new?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I saw is mainly for us, but probably some with other brands, is Q5 fucking ripped it this year. It was crazy. I was not expecting that. I was expecting just in our forecast, kind of a downturn, you know, around holidays. It's what we saw last year. You know, it's what a lot of brands, I think, I would estimate. I mean, I was first expecting it shipping cutoff times, right? I can't get it in time, whatever. I would say we're medium on the giftability component. I think supplements are very non-giftable. You know, certain things are very giftable. And you know, I would say, I don't know what percentage, I don't know if you have any thoughts, but I feel like there definitely are percentages of people that are buying it as gift, but it's not the easiest thing to gift. What do you think? Like, what percentage do you think of our like December orders were gifts?
If I were to judge based on like customer feedback and not customer feedback, like tickets, I'd say it's under 10%, probably under 5%. It's more it's more skincare and actually Miracle Balm, like a couple of shades of Miracle Balm. Yeah. People have said they gifted it. And then like moms buying what the foundation for their kids, like there's some of that, but probably
under 10% in December, right? So it's not like that. Yeah. So I don't think we saw like a big, you know, downtrend after we kind of our, you know, shipping guarantees were over. And, you know,
so is that Q5?
So Q5 is right after. I don't know the official. When I saw the performance, like December was really good for a lot of brands. But when I saw the performance really take off was the day after Christmas. I thought that week was going to be dead, just super slow. Forecasts were pretty low for it. And it just took off. It went to it. Like December was good, you know, compared to expectations. And it just went to another level.
Do you think there are less people spending?
Well, yeah. So that's the theory. It's like everybody's kind of dumping their budget or had dumped their budget. And, you know, if you look at Black Friday, I do some advising with this company, Varos. And so like I have access to their data set of like 3,000 brands. And so we're able to kind of see, you know, it's an awesome tool, but able to kind of see like what you know, performance looks like, what spend looks like, what CPMs look like. And obviously November is hard. Everybody's dumping their budget, spending it. If you work in like a really big brand, you know, again, when we're talking about like CPMs, it's less about these tiny $1 million, you know, a year spend DTC brands. And in the grand scheme of things, it's like Coke and Pepsi dumping their budget at the end of the quarter, you know, or Apple, like, and what happens in those ones is if you don't spend your budget, you don't get it. So they're like dumping it. But I think they probably try to dump it in November and early December. So yeah, I think there's just a lot of people pulling back because you expect conversion rates to go down, you know, just the intent to go down. But you can really take advantage of Q5 because even if conversion rates go down, you know, they might go down 10%. They're going to go down from Black Friday because they were artificially inflated, because not artificially, but they were super high. But they're still probably not. I saw them go back down to baseline or slightly above baseline for most brands. I didn't see them go down to like super low. But CPMs are decreasing at a faster rate. And to everybody that says CPMs don't matter, that's not totally true. You don't want to optimize for CPMs. You don't want to optimize for click-through rate. However, it's just one of the components, one of the inputs to get the potential output. If you have a $400 CPM, it's going to make it really, really hard to succeed. You know, if you have a cheaper CPM and everything else stays the same, your CPAs are going to decrease. And so this is one of those rare times where that happens, where, you know, conversion rates are staying the same. CPMs, I mean, I saw them, you know, up to, I spoke to Adweek about it a few weeks ago, but I think they said about 40% is kind of what, you know, some of the advertisers and agencies reported. So that's been crazy. So yeah, I saw some really big decreases, some of the lowest CPMs I've seen in years. Like I didn't think we would.
When does that stop?
So I think it's pretty much stopped. I don't know when like the official Q5 dates are, but pretty much from the 26th of December to like, you know, the first week of January, we took full advantage. We spent really hard. I think anybody who is in health, wellness, and I think some beauty can really take advantage of it. You know, health and wellness are really difficult in Q4 actually, because people aren't really focused on their health then. So I think those brands can really take advantage of it. But yeah, I still am very pleased with the CPMs. I don't think they're high. I think they're very reasonable right now. So I think right now it's like people are going to catch on that Facebook is doing well again, and people are going to start spending again. It's going to be, this is my guess, just my prediction. And that'll increase the CPMs. But right now, if you know something and you know that Facebook's performing pretty well for your brand, like take advantage of it. As long as obviously you're profitable and you're hitting your targets, you know, don't spend into a loss. But if you feel like you can, you know, don't regret not spending enough just because you thought this moment was going to last forever.
Amazing. Final question for the growth guys and gals. Is retargeting dead, or is retargeting alive, or like what's the retargeting situation?
My current views on retargeting are post iOS, probably about a year ago, maybe 8 months ago. What we found was that no matter how hard we tried to exclude customers and website visitors with our prospecting, so with our cold audiences, we ended up doing some type of retargeting in general. And that was, you know, validated with, you know, Northbeam, new and returning customers and visitors with Google Analytics as well. And in fact, when we tried harder to exclude people, we actually ended up showing ads to those people more often. I have some theories to why, but I don't know at all. So it was like, well, we're showing 30% of our budget to existing customers anyways. Like, that's actually a pretty good split that we'd want for prospecting versus retargeting. Like, why are we spending extra money on them? So short story, yes, we don't currently do retargeting. However, we also are retargeting. We're just doing it in a full funnel campaign. So we still exclude customers. We exclude them based on pixel data as well as Klaviyo data, but we are not doing a separate retargeting campaign or ad set. I wasn't sure at first because a lot of times you want to do different messaging, but I think for the most part, you can still get away with the same messaging. At least for us, it works for us that we're able to kind of get away with the same. But yeah, no matter how hard we try to exclude people, we're not. So it's like, why are we spending more money on it? Even if retargeting looks good in Facebook, if you're looking at like a 1 day clip in something like Northbeam, it's often not incremental, and you're just kind of, Facebook is reporting view through conversions on people that would have bought anyways, most likely.
So it's been a hard year for e-commerce brands. And, you know, one thing that we've all been focusing on a lot more, certainly us at Jones Road have been focused on a lot, is retention, specifically owned audiences. What are you doing to provide the best possible customer experience and getting as much value and revenue as you can out of your existing customer cohorts? And an amazing way to do that is with an owned app using TapCart. I truly believe, you know, a few years ago when everyone was starting, you know, SMS programs for this, I really didn't think that brands needed to, you know, have an SMS program. And, you know, I kind of feel the same about apps. At first, I wasn't really sure. I thought a website was fine. But honestly, since learning about TapCart and seeing how great it is, I've actually become a believer. And I really believe that for most brands, having an app as a part of their retention tech stack for owned audiences is such a great idea. So what I want to do is just show you guys a little bit of the inside of TapCart, kind of just show you what it looks like, preview the app for you, and just kind of walk you through how easy it is to use it. It's super cool. Before I got started with TapCart, I thought that I really didn't know much about an app, but I figured it would take a ton of time, be super expensive to develop, thought you needed your own developers, but it's actually super simple. TapCart set up this app for us in about a week. They do all of the design. They pretty much make it just so easy. So all you have to do, if you can plug and play and drag and drop just like a landing page builder, you can get an app going for your store pretty instantly, you know, in a matter of weeks at the very most, sometimes within a week. So I just want to kind of show you guys the app. I mean, look at it. It looks just like our website. It's pretty awesome. You can have, you know, your nav, you have your logo in here, you have a cart. You can, again, it's, look how easy it is just to edit the content. You can just, you know, change your images, change where it goes to, change the section. They've just got a bunch of these sections that you can kind of just put in there, especially if you want to do something. You know, an app is a great time, you know, to offer a great place to offer promos, exclusive things to your existing customers. You can put in here, you know, look how easy this is just to drag and drop, right? Like I said, if I can do it, anyone can. Just drag and drop, edit the content, remove it. You can change your, you know, your font. But yeah, it's a great time. It's a great place to offer promos. So you can definitely definitely kind of make use of some of this existing content. Just kind of drag and drop some of these blocks in when you want. You can have videos in here, so it's great for content, exclusive content for your customers. Again, it looks just like our website. They were able to match it pretty perfectly. But, you know, one of the benefits is because it's an app, it loads super quickly. So yeah, again, you can see kind of how easy it is. You can edit, you know, theme settings in here. You can edit the navigation. It's super cool. They've got some really cool features to grow your app and your user base, where you can scan a QR codes. So you can, you know, print or create a QR code that you can use online or anywhere. Direct people to your app if you want to, you know, direct people to your app to get a discount from your Facebook group, whatever it is. So this is a super cool one that I've seen a lot of brands use really well. You know, you can get a ton of data. You know, another thing I love is push notifications. So again, we're all trying to reach customers where, you know, ads are expensive, CPMs are up, it's getting harder to track. So we're all trying to reach places, and email is great, SMS is great, but it, you know, there's a cost to it. The cool thing about a push notification is there's no additional cost to send a push notification. So just like you're going to set up, you know, I'll show you exactly how to do it. Just like you're going to set up a text, you can set up a push notification just as easily. But with a text, there's a cost every time you send it out. And if your brand's growing, that can definitely add up. With a push notification, there's no incremental cost. So you can set up, you know, based on a product, you can do it based on a collection. So again, I think that this is super cool. You can do it based on a collection. You just write your copy in here. It's super easy. Change some settings. You can schedule it. It's awesome. It's super cool. It's a great way, just again, to be able to kind of another way to reach your customers without an additional cost. The great thing is, right, it takes up the screen. You can even make these full screen and there's no additional cost. You know, if I haven't said that already, I love it. I think it's super cool. Like I said, I think nearly everybody should consider having an app. And the best part is if you go to tapcart.com/downtochat, you can actually get up to 2 months free. Go to tapcart.com/downtochat. You can see this amazing landing page that I have. Just fill out your info, book a demo with the Tapcart team. And I highly recommend you do if you're trying to squeeze out more incremental revenue from your existing customers in 2023.
The other thing that'll be fun, just as like a testy that we'll report back on, is we're going to run our second direct mail campaign. The first one did pretty well. And yeah, I mean, it was funny. We were talking about it. I mean, we're looking at like the ROAS in app and then the incremental ROAS. And it was like astronomical in app, but really, really strong. You know, as Cody taught me, the iROAS. For you folks at home.
To give Postpilot some credit, and we have no affiliation from them, we're, you know, full paying customer, give them some credit. They're actually helping us run the holdout and run the incrementality. So like they're kind of like putting the money where their mouth is, but they are also reporting on like the ROAS, which I think is just like, okay, of the people in the segment, here's how much revenue you generated on Shopify. We have no idea how much of that actually happened because of postcards or not. So what you have to do is run a holdout. So given credit, they're actually doing that. I would say if you're doing direct mail and you're not running a holdout and measuring incrementality, like, you should probably not be running direct mail unless like you've done it in the past and you feel really good about it, because, you know, just doing the math and seeing the split. I mean, I think it's probably the Postpilot ROAS was probably 5 times higher than our incremental ROAS, right?
Like give or take. Math. Yep.
All right. So like that's pretty crazy. And from some of the, you know, screenshots and just things of like Postpilot dashboards that I've seen online, like some of that is probably not profitable. I think a lot of that, if you're not running incrementality and you're looking at, you know, the changes in contribution margin, if you're at like a Postpilot ROAS of 5 and you're saying, you know, 20, let's say 20% of that, like that's probably not super great. So again, I think direct mail, I think my only caution is like so many brands just go to these new channels. It's like, oh, I saw somebody is crushing Snapchat ads this week. Let's go test Snapchat. Let's go test this. I'm like, oh, everyone's doing direct mail, we got to do it, you know.
Yeah, but
like, yeah, if you're not measuring incrementality on this stuff, like you can definitely be wasting money, I think.
And the funny thing is that a lot of the people that are going from channel to channel haven't quite ironed out email, SMS, some of the kind of some of the basic ones. But
so, although we've still got work we can do there as well, but
yeah,
totally agree.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
So test of the week, direct mail, or we'll kind of report back. We did it for Black Friday, which was a huge one. Now we kind of want to see, here's our thought process. You know, we want to see if we're able to get it working for another launch. And then what do we want to do with it from there?
Yeah. I mean, if we can crush this launch, we'll think about, you know, the road towards prospecting. But you know, automated flows, all that fun stuff. I think as we continue to track it,
it would be amazing if we get to prospecting on that.
Yeah.
Talk to some brands that are profitable on prospecting on iROAS. So that would be crazy if you can do that.
I mean, like we can slowly step it up. The thought was like, you know, right now we're going for previous purchasers, then we can go to non-purchasers that are on our list and then kind of go colder and colder. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And real quick, let me know if this makes sense. Like part of it, I hate the word arbitrage, but like, I do think there's opportunities in media that's harder to track because it means that if you can figure out how to track it and make sure it's having an impact on your business, just the fact that it's harder to track probably means it's probably slightly underpriced compared to other things. You know, there's more brand spending on Facebook because they can so easily see the return, you know, same thing, but it's a lot harder, less brand spending on YouTube, less brand spending on, you know, whatever platform would potentially be, you know, less brand spending on TV because it's a lot, you know, harder to track. But I think if you can actually get it working and feel really confident in your measurement of it, there's probably some underpriced attention that you could get on them.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it in this scheme of things, like if you look at your email inbox on any given day, you probably have a silly amount of spam. Mail is like, I guess it depends. Like my parents probably have more spam mail than I do, but
sure, I get like nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get a ton, but also like the few that I get that are brands that I purchased, like kind of like a reactivation postcard, it definitely hits. Like I definitely
have you ordered from any?
I'm a very bad case study because I'm extremely stingy, but
I got one. So
definitely
Vuori
keeps the top of mind
catalogs. Yeah, Vuori has these catalogs, so they're not even like postcards; they're like, you know, full on catalogs. And obviously, they're a huge brand, so they're spending a ton. And I've seen a bunch of them. Like, I've seen like neighbors get them. I'm not, again, this is kind of thing. It's like, did they make me purchase? Did they not? Like, I was probably going to purchase anyway, but like, I love Vuori, so I buy a ton of Vuori. But theirs definitely have made me stop and think. And again, I don't get that much mail, so that was definitely one that stood out to me.
Is it like a lookbook, like meaning just photos, or is it like pricing as well?
I don't know, actually, the pricing. Yeah. I was just looking at the merch. I don't know.
I got one a couple of weeks ago from Todd Snyder, and they send probably 3 or 4 times a year, and it's just like a lookbook. It's just like photos of new styles, et cetera. And I think that's it's probably somewhat more of a brand moment than like a, you know, like a postcard that's like a scan to purchase kind of energy. Sure. But
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of these channels, like brands kind of have to make decisions about how much of an awareness play is this versus like how much of a direct response play. Like if you look at Hello, like even if you look at TV, right? Like it can be very brand top of funnel, no offer. Or some of them are really turning it hard into direct response, like HelloFresh. It's like, you know, use this code, use this QR. So I think there's like
a Liberty,
ways to go about it.
Liberty Mutual or Geico that's just always on, but not necessarily directing people.
Yeah. So those are very brand. Yeah. I guess I'm thinking like DTC brands running like connected television. Especially because I don't get that much. It definitely works and makes you think a little bit about it.
I mean, there's also most certainly a cognitive dissonance as brands get to a certain size. They're like, we can't be a $200 million brand and not be doing X, Y, and Z. And there's like a team dedicated to putting out this, you know, big catalog that comes out 3 times a year. And there's probably not a ton of measurement going on there. So,
but I think they do. I mean, I haven't done that much work. I've just known from like listening to like direct response advertisers, like there's a ton. There's definitely stuff you can do measurement because you can look at the list of who you're sending it to and you can perform holdouts and all that stuff. So you can even do that at scale. So, but also if you're sending to a different offer, like not that we love doing coupon codes or stuff like that, but if you're sending it to a different page or a different offer, or that's like your only media, I mean, people fucking crush it with catalogs, like furniture. It's huge. Like that's probably who I see the most direct mail catalogs from is furniture.
I mean, Some of the like the U line or B&H, like these catalogs that are 300 pages and they weigh a ton, like they're sending out, I don't even know how many, like it has to make sense. It's a fascinating space. I mean, the other last thing we'll say on the direct mail is there are like, kind of like you can add your card to like Saks boxes or like off fifth boxes. You know, sometimes you open a box and you'll see like the wine cards and the like,
like
the be part of that thing, bundle. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yes. Some people do that and succeed with it.
Interesting. I think it's, you're obviously like selecting to be within like a certain customer profile, right? Like if somebody's buying from off fifth, you know, chances are they're looking for luxury items at a discount, which is like a luxury wine brand that's five bottles for 200, right?
All right, what's next? Talking about, so the question somebody asked you that I know you want to answer is, can you over-optimize your site? And I think we take that a step kind of wider, and it's just like, can you over-optimize in general? Like, how do you know what the right level of optimization for your brand looks like?
Yeah, and I think it's you know, I think we can split into a few different kind of subtopics, like over-optimizing on ads, over-optimizing on PDP, over-optimizing in checkout. And when I think about over-optimizing, I think about those checkouts that are like kind of like the direct response checkouts where everything's spinning and flying and things popping up and badges and, you know, and so much of the thought process there is around like, well, if a customer is getting to checkout, we want to make sure we resolve all the objections and make sure that they are feeling super secure and put a Trustpilot badge and everything else. And I think the thought process that goes through my head is, you know, when a customer is getting to checkout at that point in their journey, you'd hope that you've done a little bit of you know, education, et cetera, from the get-go. So from the ad that they're hopping into, they have an understanding of what your brand is doing. And it's kind of like, I guess, like the more friction you put in the funnel, the slower they're pushing through that funnel, the more understanding they have as your brand, you know, of your brand. And obviously, you know, abandoned carts are a thing and all that. But I wonder, I guess the question is like, I wonder, does that diminish the value that people have of your brand? Like, does it feel jank? Does it feel cheap? Does it feel sketch when you have a bunch of things flying in the checkout? I wonder what you think about that.
I'll let you answer that one first.
Yeah.
I have thoughts that are related to other parts of it, but you're more the expert here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's my thought here, is that obviously brands, you know, more luxury brands that have an established brand identity and have been around, like, you know, obviously Tiffany doesn't have to put a big Trustpilot badge and a lock on their checkout, right? Like there's obviously that very, very edge side of the spectrum where you're a luxury brand, you've built a brand persona, you've been around for a decade or 2 years, but people know who you are. And then there's the newcomers on the block that obviously have to do a little bit more diligence to make themselves look buttoned up and all about it. I do think that there's a certain point in checkout when it gets over optimized and feels kind of crazy and like a carousel and bells and whistles and things flying. And I think to me as a consumer, it feels janky. Like I'm more concerned when I'm on a page that has like 17 locks and security. But then again, like the caveat is that I know that you know, somebody over 70 might feel differently about like, hey, is this page secure? Oh shit, I see the lock. I know it's secure. I can place the order. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think there's really three separate questions. A, does it convert better or not? And I think a lot of times brands will add these things and people will do them and not really test it. And I think I have seen scenarios where doing these stuff, these best practices, there are a lot of CRO best practices that actually can probably harm, but also just something that works for one brand does not mean that it works for you because you have a different, like you mentioned, subset of customers. You know, you might have a different age. What works on a boomer is not going to work on Gen Z and vice versa. So number one, you have to test it, see what's getting better. Secondly, what are you testing and measuring? Maybe it converts better, but maybe a different metric is changing. So I see so many of these. The most important thing when we're trying to drive, like, conversion rate optimization is the biggest misnomer. And again, I think, so the first question is, how does it convert better? The second question is, how do you balance conversion rate optimization with customer experience? You have to make a personal decision. Okay, this might convert better, but is this how I subjectively want my customers to, and that's why I let you answer that one, but is this subjectively how I want my customers to feel about our brand and what the experience be? But the third one is, what metric are you actually optimizing for with conversion rate optimization? And then conversion rate optimization is the biggest misnomer because you're not trying to improve conversion rate, right? Because average order value is in there. Why it doesn't, I can do a ton to get conversion rate better, but average order value drops. So I think that's important. but taken a lot further. I think a lot of people are aware of that and understand that revenue per session is the goal, and that's the most important thing. Right? But I think just taking that kind of quite a bit of a step further, we're really trying to optimize contribution margin per session. Because I see so many people just blindly following best practices for bundling and how to increase average order value. And they're not taking the time to calculate or even think about it on a contribution margin per order. What I mean by that is there are things you can do to increase average order value, like buy three, save 40% or whatever it is. Sure, your AOV goes up, but so does your discount. So your margin goes down. So it could, if you're discounting more than your AOV goes up in terms of percentages, you're actually losing money and making less contribution dollars per order. And I think that's what I don't know, because I don't know anybody's numbers, but that's what I worry about when I see a lot of this over optimization to try to bundle and upsell, is you're getting your people are just looking at take rate. Oh, when we do this, we get a 20% lift on our post purchase compared to when we don't discount, we get a 10% lift. But that's just the revenue lift. What's your contribution margin lift?
It's so much of this resonates. All of it resonates. I think the interesting thing, kind of like the way I think about it, is it's always the brands that over optimize and push and get those purchasers that are always the ones that are like, oh shit, how do we get these people to come back? And when you cast a wide enough net, you get customers that maybe shouldn't be your customers. Maybe they came in because they felt like this was an offer they shouldn't have refused, and they're not even in the market for X, Y, and Z. It's just you're offering seven free gifts on the purchase, but in reality, maybe this isn't your ideal customer. And Alex G, who we both love following on Twitter, posted about this the other day, how like increasing LTV is such a big focus is finding the right customers. And we spoke about this a bunch in the past. I know we've spoken about this season one, but I think it's so important to make sure that by, like you're saying, like giving away contribution margin, pushing for these, you know, for these purchasers and making sure that you're not ruining your chances of getting them back.
You're right about that. But yeah, Even when you get them back, I still see I see a lot of the same things happening to win people back and caring about revenue and not contribution margin instead. Mm-hmm. Like the classic, like abandoned cart flow that you mentioned earlier. It's like, hey, come back. Like I even see like Glossier running up. Like, hey, like, so A, like, the abandoned cart flows, you know, why does everyone have to just go to, hey, well, you left them behind 15% off. Yeah. You know, cause the same thing again, you can, if you A/B test that versus no discount and you look in Klaviyo, of course you're going to see better conversion rate and click-through rates on the discount one, right? Like it makes sense. But again, it's hard. I think A, most people are not thinking contribution margin first. Like that's not everybody even knows what that word means. I mean, it took me a while to learn that. Like I used to run Facebook retargeting ads. And of course the one that worked, this for different brands, the one that worked best was of course the one that had a 10% discount and the dynamic product ad after they added to cart. So no judgment or shame on anybody who doesn't, but I think that's a really important thing that marketers and brands need to start looking at is contribution margin. And if you're doing a test like that, that's what you should really be measuring. If you're offering a discount in it.
Yeah. I, for the folks at home, kind of like the next step in what Cody's saying is essentially if you're running a A/B test on your abandoned cart and one's 15% off and one is full price and you see the 15% off does really well, do the math after that and find out, including once you take that 15% off, are you still maximizing your revenue based on like, even if you do an extra 10 or 20 or 30 sales a day, is that affecting your bottom line in a positive way? And again, it boils down to like 2 years ago, the business, the game was just as many customers as you can get, show your growth, continue grow, and then IPO, or grow, and then exit to a private equity firm. And now that we're heading into an environment where people are focused on profit, which is a crazy word that we haven't heard for a while, I think there's going to be a lot of optimizing for finding the right customer, not crazy discounting. And again, it's like so many of these customers that you discount, if they came in on a 30% off first offer, it's going to be really hard to get them back in on a second offer, on a second order with no discount. So obviously you have to discount. They're not going to pay double or 30% more on a second order. So you go into discounting. And then that's a separate conversation, but I do think that's 1,000% spot on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's there. Same thing like we talked about even with direct mail. It's like, especially once you start having money and cost behind it. I would be curious if brands are even profitable with their SMS programs all the time, if you're not looking at things on a contribution margin, because you do have a variable cost, a cost every time you send.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you do that, yeah, plus I mean, you start discounting. Like that's a good amount of your margin there.
Yeah, I think people very often, you know, there's been a general trend where, you know, you move to a new kind of like you move from email to SMS and just bring over all the best practices that you're doing on email, make it a little shorter, send it as text. And then, you know, there's a constant every couple of years you shift. And I think people, you know, almost started thinking about email as if it's free and until they realize they're paying, you know, their ESP, they're paying them thousands of dollars a month. But aside from that, it's like your SMS is like you're driving a 400x ROAS. And it's like, obviously that's inflated. But outside of that, you're paying to send every text and people just batch and blast and obviously unsubscribe and all that other fun stuff. But I'm just saying a lot of words and agreeing with you. So
no, I agree. Can I have one more hot take? I saw somebody talking about, this is attribution, but it's not related to like, you know, Northbeam attribution. This is kind of SMS and email attribution. I know we've talked about it, but we use last click. We don't use, so for anybody who's not familiar, right? Like, you will have attribution windows and you can change them in your email and SMS providers, but they're very generous often.
Give the folks, start all the way from the beginning. Give the folks a little bit of an education on what these windows mean.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, attribution is just like, what's the window or what's the definition for claiming credit for the purposes? So for example, do you know what Klaviyo's default is? I don't actually know because I don't really go off it.
I thought it was a default 7-day.
I thought longer, but I don't know. I thought it was like a 28-day, but I don't know. But it's like, there's like a one for click and one for views. So like for example, let's just say Klaviyo again. Somebody's going to think I'm an idiot because I don't even know what the Klaviyo attribution is, but we use GA for this. But let's say it was 28-day click and 7-day view. It would mean that anybody who ordered, anybody who ordered within 7 days of viewing an email or clicking on an email would be considered as a purchase. Now that's very generous. So a lot of the attribution is very non-incremental. And then if you look at, you know, attentive,
because theoretically, because theoretically they could have seen multiple ads and then read your email, then saw your SMS. And now every one of those platforms is taking credit because it's within 20 days of doing all that stuff. So now everyone, if you do all the math together, you've made $1 zillion, but in reality you made
it's way higher. Yeah. If you look at all those platforms, your totals are going to be way higher. So that's the value of one of the values of a multi-touch tool is, you know, you can use a model where the total is 100% and then you can split it out based on giving credit for different ones. But yeah, that's also it. But also it's the likelihood of incrementality at that point is very small, because if you're saying anybody who received a text message from you or an email with you in the last 7 days, your Klaviyo and Attentive or PostScript whatever you use are claiming credit, that's very generous. That's super generous. You know what I mean? So it's very hard to look at, you know, if you're comparing, right, email versus email and you're counting all these things, there are so many random factors that can occur that you don't have as much confidence in saying, but if you're using those windows as saying, oh, this email did a lot better than this one. So that's why we use Google Analytics last click. So, you know, you have to use UTM codes. And really what happens is the last thing that people purchased based on a click, not a view, but the last touch point. So if they went add to email in Google Analytics, that would give attribute to there. So again, we don't use GA for ads. We use Northbeam for ads. We use a 1-day click, but just for email. And that allows us to compare very conservatively. So if we know, if we run an abandoned cart test and we look at last click and the last click improves on one, we have a high confidence that we're not measuring for incrementality there, but we have high confidence that there's a bigger difference between the two. And there's a better chance of that actually making a significant difference in revenue. So I think that's really important. I think more brands should and marketers should be thinking about that and doing it. I'm not saying that Google Analytics is the source of truth. I don't believe in sources of truth. I think there's data points and kind of creates a story together, and you have to look at multiple sources, right? But I'm not saying that, you know, the only value that email provides is the last click. I just think that's the most conservative measure. There's probably a lot more value that it provides more than that. People are going to see it. People are going to click it. And then they might click email, and they might click SMS, and they might buy on a different device. But I know, I'm very confident that if I improve that last click, I should improve all other windows. Versus if I, if you go most conservative, you're probably going to improve all the liberal windows. But if you start with the most liberal attribution settings, and you improve that, I'm not as confident that my most conservative ones are going to improve, if that makes any sense.
It makes a ton of sense. When you said I have an attribution hot take, I was worried you're going to go hotter than this hot take.
Yeah, so Sean Frank says attribution wars are over. He says we won that battle. No, he says Northland won that battle. Did I just restart them? One more part for the take is that, so a lot of people hate on last click because what people will do is they're like, oh, you know what? Facebook is I'm losing money at Facebook. My ROAS is a 1 on Facebook, but it's a 7 on Google. And then the board member or the CEO or somebody who doesn't understand the stuff, or even the CMO actually, will be like, we got to stop spending money on Facebook. We got to put our money into Google. It's like, how the fuck do you think they got to Google? They had to find out about you somewhere. You know what I mean? So I think the most important thing is you need a model for your business, understanding the customer journeys, again, using the data to tell the story in different ways, different tools, multi-touch attribution, holdout testing, you know, stuff like that, last click, where you're building a model and you're knowing, okay, you know, because Google Ads is very bottom of the funnel, last click is actually pretty much capturing the whole value. If anything, that's capturing more than the value should be. You know, like I don't think we're actually getting $7 back for every dollar we spend if your ROAS is a 7, you know, because you have to combine that with your top of funnel stuff. So I'm not going to just say, oh, let's just put all of our money into Google because that's so good. Like, you just can't. That doesn't work like that. I'm also not going to say, oh, you know what? Our TikTok ads suck because they're at a 0.5. I'm just making up numbers, right? We're losing money. If I believe and have data, other sources that shows that TikTok is a little bit more top of funnel, and it drives a lot of that Google search or the email or SMS, you know, revenue later on. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense. So when you're saying if you have data that shows, are you talking about post-purchase surveys or?
Yeah, I think combo. I think post-purchase surveys. It could be as simple as looking at volume of, let's say you run money on Facebook, right? Because that's just what most brands do. Just export that data for spend throughout the year and run a regression analysis, just trying to find like a simple correlation between that and your branded search volume or traffic or your branded search revenue. And in many scenarios, you should find some type of correlation there. That would be like a really simple way to look at it.
I love a good regression analysis.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. But I would look at regression analysis, I'd look at post-purchase survey. You know, if you're spending a ton, you would look at media mix modeling, MMM. You know, there's a bunch of things that you can do, but post-purchase survey would be a really easy, simple way to look at it where you can see, oh, you know what? Like, for example, Facebook ads are a 0.75. That's not great on the last click. But you know what? A lot of people are telling us that they're first finding out about us on Facebook or Instagram, and then it seems like they're searching later. So you got to kind of triangulate things. This is why I don't believe in single source of truth. But I think a lot of people hate on last click because they use it incorrectly, and they're like, oh, that looks great, let's put more spend there, and that doesn't look great, let's shut it off. I think you should potentially be using last click or a one-day click for your directional measurements between the platforms, but not really using that for under. There's a difference between how I'm using it between the different ads, between, you know, different tests, between different email flows, the same email flow but different tests. There's a difference between using it for that and then also using last click for this is my total revenue or my understanding of how much value this channel is capturing. Two very different things.
Love it. I think we're just about out of time.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I have nothing else to add. I think we're all set.
This was what, episode 9? So we got 3 more?
This is episode 9. I think we should get a fun guest before the end of the season.
trying to get Sharma back on. He was our most listened to in the first season.
And wait, the D2C guy?
The D2C king, trying to talk about landing pages. So if the people want it, we'll try to get him on, and then maybe one other guest, and then another solo one maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if the people want it, just at Mr. Sharma, and say
you have to go on Cody and Eli's podcast.
Talk about LPs. Talk about hooks.
I think it would be fun to talk about just one completely just landing pages.
I could sit this one out.
You could just sit there with a popcorn if you want.
I love it. Okay. Yeah, thank you for listening.
They produce are so sick. I'm super happy with ours, and we should talk about ours on the next one because that could be a test of the week. But I've seen some of them that they're putting out are just awesome. So yeah, I think that'd be great. Nick, if you're listening, let's get you on.
Yeah, I love a good test of the week. Okay. Cheers. We'll see you next week.
Peace.